This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One. Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
Good afternoon. I'm Juliana Erno-Pierce, Associate Producer for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer. I'm in San Luis Obispo with the founder of Zozu Project, Dr. Elaine Remy Lubbins, and Executive Director of Zozu Project, Katie Griffin. These two amazing women are changing the lives of hundreds of children in surrounding communities in Arua, Uganda, and I'm so happy to welcome them here today and discuss the work they're currently doing. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having us, Juliana. This is just a dream come true. We are so grateful for the opportunity to talk about Zozu Project with the Central Coast and surrounding communities.
Yeah, thanks for having us here today, Juliana.
You're welcome. I really think that you guys have such an amazing story to share, so I'm really excited for everyone to hear. So let's start with Dr. Remy. You and your husband, Dr. Michael Lubbins, founded Zozu Project in January 2015. And do you mind taking us back to the beginning, just to give our listeners an idea, your first trip to Arua, Uganda, and what moved you guys so strongly that led to the establishment of this nonprofit organization?
Yes, absolutely. So my husband and I are physicians, and we first traveled to Arua, Uganda, this little corner in the northwestern corner of Uganda, right on the border of the Congo and near South Sudan. And we were working in a makeshift medical clinic, hanging around the medical clinic, not able to attend school, and the effects of that lack of opportunity were everywhere. I remember holding a little girl named Lois. She was 4 years old, and she was bloated and covered in skin sores, suffering from malnutrition, and her mother, Jessica, just stared off blankly. She'd been sold into marriage to a polygamous man, a common practice in this area, and at 21, Lois was one of her four children, and she had no way to support her children. And then I also met Harrison, a four-year-old little boy. He was just dressed in tattered rags, suffering from malaria in the medical clinic, and he had been abandoned by his father years previously, and then his mother had recently died of AIDS, leaving him an AIDS orphan. And I was just really impacted by the level of despair and hopelessness. And if I'm completely honest, I'd hoped to go and work in the clinic and come home and get back to life as usual and maybe even feel good about the time that we'd had.
Yeah.
They'll pat myself on the back, if I'm completely honest. And I just looked back at the time we had in the medical clinic, and it just felt like a little blip on the screen. It felt like we had done nothing to interrupt the cycle of intergenerational poverty. I just felt so hopeless.
And I can imagine possibly a state of shock and, like you mentioned, helplessness that you felt. And going back to what you said about wondering, like, what you could possibly do, like, maybe you had a dream that maybe felt too impossible in your mind.
For sure. Everything felt impossible.
Because you're a few miles away.
Right.
Yeah, it's not down the street.
Right.
Yeah.
What change could just a few of you guys make with such a huge...
Yes, huge halfway cycle around the world.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And here you guys are today. Do you mind briefly touching on where you guys initially started and what you've accomplished thus far through the help from the local community?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So during our last day in Uganda, we spent some time with a man named John Paul Suava, who is now our Ugandan director. And he did have a dream to help children like Lois and Harrison escape a cycle of intergenerational poverty. But he also didn't just have a dream. He had quite a detailed plan, and he also brought decades of experience in long-term poverty alleviation. He'd actually moved to Arua because it was an area with such a startling history of violence and suffering, and he was amassing a team of Ugandan leaders. And it really hit me that the right people were already there, which is sometimes you see need and poverty and like, but the infrastructure or the human resources aren't there. And it just really felt like in this case, they just needed financial assistance. They just needed some help financially.
Getting it off the ground.
Yes. So interestingly, in the meantime, our kids really were struck by all these other children who were not able to attend school, and they started working on establishing a nonprofit with their aunt and uncle, and that was not involving me. Little did I know. But one thing happened that once I should let me back up. Little did I know where this was going to lead. But we just kept putting one foot in front of the other, and in just these few short years, we've been able to purchase a bunch of additional acres of land. So we just kept putting one foot in front of the other. And I periodically look back and just say, how in the world did we get here? But we had a group step up and support the building of the initial school, 4-classroom school. And just since then, we've been able to purchase acres of additional land, double the size of the primary school, build a permanent kitchen, library. We now have a full-time medical clinic and pharmacy, and we have a preschool, and we have built 10 teacher homes and are embarking in the second phase, building 13 additional
13 new
teacher homes.
Wow.
So we support 39 full-time Ugandan staff who serve 520 students, including Lois and Harrison. They are not only alive, but they're in seventh grade now. Mm-hmm. And they're thriving, which is fitting, as Zozu means thrive in the local tribal language.
Yeah, and the school is called Solid Rock Primary School.
Correct.
And thank you so much, Elaine, for sharing your story.
Of course.
And Katie,
yeah.
As director of Zozu Project, you are in charge of
one or two things.
Quite a few things. And you are
right,
the woman running the show. As director, this includes child sponsorships, donations, working with all of the teachers, social workers, and staff within the school in Uganda.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You have a board, but you are the only
official employee. Yeah. Here in the United States.
In the States. Wow.
Yeah.
And the rest of the 39 employees, the Zozu Project staff, they're all in Uganda, which is incredible. Why do you think that you guys put such an emphasis on hiring local?
Really, it comes down to this, is we truly value our staff. It's a priority. It's a priority of Zozu Project from the beginning. And so to come alongside of the African leaders like JP and the rest of our staff there, the director there, as much as it's possible, our goal is to partner with these existing local groups to provide basic needs, education, and sustainable development. And this is really fantastic, and we've talked about this several times, Elaine and I, because it creates employment locally. So not only are we employing teachers to obviously teach the students that are coming through their cooks and all the different medical care and all those things, but also local contractors. So hiring local men throughout the community, not only to build what Elaine explained earlier, all the different buildings that we have going up there, but also simple things like making furniture for the school and hiring local seamstresses that make all the uniforms. And they actually make them there at the school.
Mm-hmm.
You can go into one of the rooms there and you can see the seamstress there, you know, measuring the children like in the old school way.
Yes.
Yeah. Making them from, you know, from material and from scratch. I guess that's how you'd make everything. But anyways.
Yeah. And it's really amazing too, because I think when we first would have started to think about this, we would have felt like, okay, how are we going to make this happen?
Mm-hmm.
And now we look back and it's so clear that this is so much better because it's not us with our feet on the ground in Uganda, that it's local Ugandans. They understand the culture.
Yeah.
They have relationship. There's a lot more in local investment and just commitment to the school because it's Ugandan run on every level except for the financials needed, the needed financial support.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You mentioned earlier when we were talking that working globally, you empower the local community and leaders to do what they do best, just giving them the support.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. Matched. Because that is so, because that's, we feel that's really important. That's one of the things when I took this position as executive director for Zozo Project was so important to me, is to, as a former missions pastor, I always looked for missions partners that I would partner with that were not just saying, like, here is $10,000 and we're going to come over and bring that $10,000 and all the people with it, and then we're going to build you a home and it's going to look like this, and then we're going to leave, right? Mm-hmm. Instead, it's like, no, you know, they're amazing people who have all the knowledge and wherewithal to completely support their community and build and create and all this. And so it's coming alongside of them and saying, we believe in you, mm-hmm. And we want to help you further and eradicate this extreme poverty. Yeah. And so it's just a win-win.
Now that you guys are working on your secondary school, so this will tie into child sponsorships a little bit later.
Sure.
Focusing on schooling, social work is very crucial in
Absolutely.
The area and within the communities. So how do you guys decide what kids are chosen from the community to go to Solid Rock Christian School?
Yeah, that's really important. Mm-hmm. That's exact. And so we have two social workers.
And again,
yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
No,
that's,
go for it.
That, these, the ways that they were, the children, the ways in which they were chosen or are chosen were all set by our Ugandan staff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We were not mm-hmm. superimposing our views yeah. on how children should be chosen. But go ahead,
right.
Katie.
No, that's important. That's an important piece to it. And so the process that the social workers do, so we have two social workers. We have social worker Richard and social worker Prossy. Mm-hmm. And they, the first process of this, of choosing a child to be chosen to attend Solid Rock, is in regards to where they live. So there's not a school bus. Where they can just travel down the road and say, hop on, like we would see normally here.
Yeah.
They have to be able to walk to school. So based on their proximity to the school where they live, is that's one of the first things. So they're able to get there every day. Secondly is the poverty level of the children and their family unit. And so, you know, the social workers spend some time with the family. And now when we say family in Uganda, that does, again, look different. What does a family look like in Arua?
Oh, it looks completely different.
Yeah.
Because a lot of our students especially have lost one or both parents. Either they've passed away or the children have been abandoned. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them live with either extended relatives or just families.
Community.
Yeah, just a guardian within the community.
Yeah.
And their family situation will change regularly as a result, too. It's not uncommon.
So it's pretty unstable.
Very unstable.
Yes. Yes. So that's a criteria, too. And then, that's with families, when they're living in extreme poverty and they're making less than $2 a day, that's our average in the area there in Arua, is they have to decide, do they want to feed their children or the children that are within their care, or do they want to send their children within their care to school? And because public school there costs money, which is mm-hmm. different than what we see here in our public schools.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's another thing. And then also is, you know, for the family or the family unit, as we can call it here, but or as we're calling it, but the social workers want to have that conversation with the family and say, are you going to support this child through this? Not financially. That's what our sponsorship does. But are you going to be able to make sure they're getting to school and be committed to Solid Rock? And so they have that discussion there. That's really important. I think that's really important part of it all. And
the parents, you said, yeah. since you mentioned guardians, so a lot of their parents, are they, like, deceased from diseases?
In a lot of the families, the men are polygamous, so a lot of the times the men don't have or don't take any responsibility for the children, and then there is HIV and AIDS and malaria, waterborne illnesses, like there are a lot of illnesses in the area. And then it's unfortunately not uncommon. Like we had a mother dying childbirth. There's just a lot of things that happen there that don't tend to happen here, mm-hmm. Other than very rarely. And then it's not uncommon for parents to become so helpless or hopeless that they just abandon the kids too. So we've heard of that in this area often.
And so that starts the cycle through the generations, is that correct?
Correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. But I think your point about making sure that the family or wherever they're living, that they're invested long term. We don't want to have a child come into our program and invest in them for several years and have them leave.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's important.
So you guys have accomplished far more than you ever imagined and dreamed. And it's all from help from your local community. So with the current need, how can, for those of us that haven't heard of Zozu Project, how can the local Central Coast community help?
Well, thank you for saying the local community, because you really jogged a thing in my mind, is that this is a grassroots organization. This started in Templeton, California, right up the road here. And basically, where we're at now with over 500 kids sponsored, that is the sponsorship. I mean, we have a few sponsors down in South County, but majority in North County. And so all those children that live in Arua, Uganda, thousands of miles away, are connected to right here on the Central Coast. It's just incredible. Mm-hmm. It really is. And so coming up, what our greatest need is right now, we have 71 new preschoolers. They're about as cute as can be.
And so, yes, they are.
They're so cute.
I saw their photos.
Did you go on the website? Yeah. So you've got to check them out. So you go on the website, and really by faith, each and every year, Zozu Project says, okay, we are committed to this area. We're committed to eradicating poverty in the area of Arua, Uganda. And so we are going to 50 kids, we're enrolling them without even having sponsors yet. Yeah. And so, and somehow every single year, those 50 those kids get sponsors throughout the year. And so this year, because of the COVID, and there was like a little bit of, so we have an additional 21 students. So that's 71 preschoolers that are currently on our website right now that are all looking for sponsors.
Aww.
And so to really have, to be able to be on this podcast here today and to be with you, Juliana, and to be able to express that need is huge for us here at Zozu Project.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned you're a grassroots nonprofit organization. And you previously mentioned you're not just any nonprofit. And that's something that really captured my attention when I initially met you guys. And with that being said, I think there are a lot of people who, when we're talking about sponsorships and donations, a lot of people are often weary of donating to nonprofits because they're not sure where or what percent of their money is actually going to the direct cause or direct source of relief. And so, do you guys have...
Yeah, how do we do it?
No. How is that?
Well, it was funny when you're asking this question, Juliana, I was thinking, I wish I had a pie graph to show you. I think that would be the easiest. But because, you know, the best way that I can explain it, Elaine, please help as we go answer this question here, but in 2020, we had total expenses of $249,000. And so of that, $242,000 that money was sent directly to Solid Rock Christian School. And so we're able to send 97% of all money that was brought into the project directly to Uganda. And so with a small operating expense, and so generally, and also what we can say is that the $35 a month, which is to sponsor a child, okay, and that the sponsorship, that child gets education, clean water, medical care, food, 2 meals a day. And so when you sponsor a child for $35, 100% of that $35 goes over to Arua.
It does. And it really does support all of that. It supports their medical care. It is their share of all the teacher and staff salaries. It covers everything, which is mind-boggling to think.
Definitely. That's amazing.
How far our U.S. dollars go
right, exactly.
In rural Uganda.
Right.
Yeah, and you mentioned $2 a day is the minimum wage.
Well, it's
the average wage of some daily wage of someone in this area. Mm-hmm. And most of our families, they survive by being subsistence farmers. And then the women will take any extra food that they grow, and they might sit there at market all day for 50 cents or $1 income.
People can sponsor a child or as many children as they feel called to support for $35 a month. And you also do a year, which comes out to $420. Mm-hmm. You can also do one-time donations, and there are also corporate sponsorships, which is pretty new, correct?
Right, yeah. So we're super excited about this. This is new to Zozu Project. So we're just beginning to roll this out. And it's a way where local businesses and national businesses can come alongside of us and support the project. And so we have four levels of sponsorship. I'll just run through them quickly because it's probably best just to go check out our website and see it out there. But we have the Thrive level, which we use that word a lot in Zozu Project. And so which starts yearly at $10,000 and up. And with a corporate sponsorship, you'll get a website. You get your business up on our website, a banner that goes across with their logo, and then recognition on our social media throughout the year. And then we have this new Zozu swag collection, which is super fun. And so the logo Patagonia jacket and some t-shirts and a bunch of, it's like a whole bag full of stuff. And then along with that, you get tickets to our annual fundraising event. And so that starts at $10,000 above for businesses, and we love for if any business is interested in that, we can set up an appointment and chat with them. Mm-hmm. And then it goes down empowerment level $5,000, dignity level 25, and community level at 1. And so it truly is a partnership.
Yeah.
It's a partnership, and we need people to come alongside. The school is expanding. The need is great.
Mm-hmm.
So we're never going to run out of kids.
Yeah.
There are always way more children.
And of your donors and community members that sponsor children, they have an opportunity to go be a part of the community in Uganda as well.
Right? Yes, many of our donors and sponsors have traveled with us to Uganda. And that's another thing we hear quite frequently as far as feedback, that sometimes people know there's this huge need and our money goes really far. And again, like we talked about earlier, in a place like rural Uganda, and yet you don't really know where your money's going and how it's being used. And so we have a lot of people that have been and visited, and they've seen where the children live, they've met the teachers and seen the school in action. Every time we ever take anybody, I always set them down and say, okay, you're going to get an orientation of how the bookkeeping is done. Like they really have a good sense of how things run over there.
Yeah.
So that's been really amazing to be able to connect people in that way.
Definitely, and people can see firsthand where their money is helping.
Yes.
Right. And one of the other bonuses to that, too, is not only can you see it, it's a tangible, but for these sponsors, I was there, and I remember two of our sponsors who had not met their sponsor children yet. And so watching them, they were in class, and when we arrived on the little car, or I guess it would be called like a little bus, but anyway, so we got there, and they went in and to find their sponsor children because they were like so excited, and then the kids came out and greeted them, and it was the most amazing thing. It was just so great to see that connection, because it's not like when we really encourage that for the sponsors to write to their children, and the children will write back to the sponsors. And so it's a relationship. And so for these particular sponsors I'm thinking of, they had been writing them for a couple years. And so they had this relationship built. And so when they saw them in person, it's like, I can hug you. So it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. I know we're all very touched by the work you guys are doing. And I can relate. I grew up going on mission trips with my family and seeing the immense despair and need that you guys talked about, and around the world. It's very intense. And those images of suffering, they never leave your mind no matter how many years have passed. And people truly live in ways that are so far from the lives we're blessed to have, as you guys mentioned. And I think it's a really good reminder to be thankful every day. Just the little things like your car breaking down, a flat tire, or hitting red lights, things that can get us so worked up. I think it's a time to take a moment and be thankful that we even have cars or food in the fridge, shoes to walk. You mentioned a lot of them are barefoot until the school can provide them with clothing. The little things that we take for granted daily, and it's a reality check.
Absolutely.
Knowing that some people have no shoes and no food and they walk miles just to find clean water, mm-hmm. or live in fear of being sold into marriage. We're so lucky. Mm-hmm. And so for listeners that want to find more information about you guys and ways to support you, you guys have social media and your websites.
Our website is zozuproject.org, and I'll spell that because it can be a little complicated when you hear all the Z's. So it's Z-O-Z-U and the word project.org. And then you can follow us on Instagram, on Facebook. We post there regularly and get updates from Uganda.
And that's your Facebook and Instagram is just Zozu Project.
Zozu Project, yeah. Z-O-Z-U.
Amazing. Well, thank you guys so much for your time. And we look forward to following the journey of what's next for Zozu Project and helping in any way that we can. And also a thank you to our listeners. I'm Juliana Arno-Pierce, Associate Producer on Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, with guests Dr. Elaine Remy Lubbins and Executive Director Katie Griffin from Zozu Project. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Juliana.
It was fun.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter, down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives. And Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.